now convene the work session for Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. The date is March 31, 2005. Today we will be dealing with two bills, or actually three bills. One is for the Board of Medical Examiners, Senate Bill 5521, and the other two deal with Board of Nursing, House Bills 5052 and 5053. I'd like to begin with 5521, and as a committee, I would indicate that there is some question yet on whether or not there would be a budget note and whether or not, or what its wording might actually be. That hasn't been finalized with both co-chairs, and so it would be my suggestion that we just not take action on this bill today.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
Is it possible that we can go to another bill? The executive director has another bill she had to go and and hear, and so she'll be back shortly.
That's fine. Then why don't we shift over to House Bills 5052, 5053, and discuss issues relating to the State Board of Nursing, and there's some questions that we need to get clarification on, so if we could have the directors come up. Okay, if the three of you would identify yourself for the record, and we'd like to ask some questions, please.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Joan Bouchard, and I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon State Board of Nursing.
Good morning. I'm Pat Miles. I'm the Budget Manager for the Board of Nursing.
And for the record, my name is Kim Cobrain, and I am the Program Executive for Compliance Investigation and Practice with the Board of Nursing.
Okay, thank you. Some questions that have come up relate to the summary of subcommittee action, which is in the booklet that we received, and it's under legislative action, and it's on, it says budget page 3, but in the lower right hand corner it says pages 204, and it's a part of the budget report and measure summary from the 72nd Legislative Assembly Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and the various packages that were requested 2 years ago have bearing on packages that are requested today. And there, to my recollection, has not been a reference to what took place 2 years ago, and that the recommendations or requests for what's to take place for 0507 have been kind of made in an isolated standpoint without referring to where things were at in these same areas 2 years ago. So I'd like to begin by asking for a clarification on Package 101 from the 72nd Legislative Assembly Subcommittee, where it says that the subcommittee eliminated three positions and 2.5 full-time equivalent, but granted equal funding with which the agency is expected to continue to staff the center with non-permanent employees. And at that time, there was one permanent position, a principal executive manager B, that was approved. So it was actually shifted from limited duration to a permanent part-time position. It was shifted to a permanent position and then increases one permanent part-time or public service representative. Anyway, the rest of it doesn't specifically relate, but you're before this committee asking for the limited duration positions to be made permanent, and so would you please explain what took place last time and how it relates to what's going on in the current recommendations?
Yes, sir. Pat Miles, Budget Officer. 2 years ago, it was in the governor's recommended budget to add the three positions and 2.5 FTE that were taken away in this package. So basically, we came out with net zero, except for we were given funding for temporary positions. when we looked at the implementation of those positions per DAS HR rules, there were two options. One, we could hire people temporarily, but then you could only hire them for 6 months at a time, or we could convert the funding for temporary positions into the 2.5 limited duration positions that go away on July 1st. So that's what happened here. We came in, we asked for the exact same three positions, 2.5 FTE, and we're asked to fill those on a limited basis for this biennium. The other position changes, I don't think you have questions on, but I'm happy to answer if you do.
No, I have no questions on those. The next question is on investigation enhancement. In our present budget requests, you're asking for additional investigation personnel. 2 years ago, the note indicates that the package adds one full-time advanced practice nursing consultant, one full-time investigator, and one part-time, half-time equivalent office specialist. The package totals $305,792, and with other funds, and there are three permanent positions, 2.5 total full-time equivalents. And so if you were granted those 2 years ago, what is the justification for coming in today and asking for yet more?
The positions that were added 2 years ago, one was a practice consultant, which does not reside in the investigations department. She is a member of the consultant group we talked about yesterday that deals with policy issues and deals individually with nurses who are not being investigated. Some of that work was being done by the investigative staff prior to that position being established, but it was a, when you spread it across seven investigators, that was a fairly minor part of their work. Although it certainly created a full-time position. The 1.5 FTE that was given for investigative work, one was a office specialist job, half-time, and the other was an investigator. We took those two positions, and I think we talked about it a few times yesterday about how we've improved our service delivery by creating a complaint intake coordinator, and also that we have an investigator who is not a nurse. He is a professional investigator at an investigator two level, and he specializes in background checks. So he is able to produce a lot of background checks, and that has improved our performance in fiscal year 2004. And the half-time position was turned into a 0.75 intake coordinator by administratively reclassing between those two positions. So we were actually able to get an additional 0.25 FTE, and we're asking for that position to go full-time because it's been so successful at being the point of contact for complainants to our department. So the eight investigators we were talking about 2 years ago, there were seven investigators.
Okay, so what it boils down to is 2 years ago, you were granted by this committee four new positions, 3.75 FTE, and now you're coming back requesting five additional positions, another 4.75 FTE. You know, if this graph continued on, you'd have about 600 people in 10 or 12 years. I mean, if you went up by percentages, of course, statistics lie, right? I don't know. Maybe you'd like to respond to that. If I had not stopped to consider the increase in the number of people you had 2 years ago before considering what we have requested now, and I'm not clear on the, you know, the justification for that. We did have some discussion about six people who would be involved in doing receptionist telephone work and relicensing at a time when you're actually going to be increasing the number of internet relicensing, those kinds of things. The concern we have is to, one, make sure that you have adequate staffing, and two, make sure that we don't expand the permanent staffing beyond what is needed because of the permanent additions to your costs. And, you know, for, we're trying to watch out for the fees that are being paid by the nurses.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts?
May, if Chair Richardson, if I may address at least the investigative portion of that and let either Pat or Joan speak to the customer service. Essentially, one of the points I was trying to get across yesterday was we now know a lot more about our workload than we did in the last biennium and even more than we did before that because we have that database. That license 2000 database that went into place in the year 2000 and has now reached a point where we can actually see what's coming in the door. Historically, what we've been able to do is know how much work we've been getting done. But at some point, well, you've just hit the same numbers over and over again because you've maxed everyone out, so your numbers are going to stay the same every year, but your backlog is going to get larger and larger and larger because you're not tracking the work that's actually coming in the door. What we're able to do now is look at the work that's coming in the door. And in my testimony, that's how I have broken down the three types of cases. We're now able to do that because of the database and start looking at what kind of time frames does that actually take. The when the request was made in the last biennium, I don't think there was as much knowledge as what the work load really looked like. I think it was more anecdotal, more of, boy, everybody is working really hard and we sense we are falling behind. But we didn't, I don't think it was clearly known to what extent to be able to qualify and quantify it to say, well, where are we going? We took, and the other thing actually that happened here is a change of leadership, if you will. I came in halfway through the last biennium, and looked at it differently than my predecessor had, and looked to, and in fact, that's why the change of taking the healthcare investigator, which is a higher position, higher paid position, and reclassifying that to the investigator two and giving it work that is more closely aligned to its requirements, taking the savings from that position, applying it to that half FTE that was just an office specialist, actually raising that up a bit so that they could do more complicated work, but that takes the load off some of the investigators so that we can achieve some more efficiencies. Having done that and seeing that we have made some very good progress, the next question is, okay, where are we still? Well, we are still behind. Hence, we need more investigative work done. The other position that had come theoretically to assist with investigations was for practice questions. This is something that the investigators did in addition to their investigative work. The idea with that position, which is no longer within the investigative area, it is in the consulting group, was to take that work off the investigators again so they could concentrate more fully on the investigations.
Okay, now I'm looking back at the numbers of total complaints. Am I correct that in a year where you had complaints, they got investigated?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
If you got, in 2001, there were 711 complaints. I assume that those aren't still hanging, but that they were dealt with when, you know, during the year that they came in. Is that basically right? I mean, within so many days after a complaint comes in, you start investigating it?
Chair Richardson, members of the committee, what we've been able to determine is that, and then you'll find this on page 18 of our presentation materials, is that about 50% of the investigations are closed and completed within 30 days. And when I'm saying investigations, I've now actually enlarged our scope. Because the term investigation is going to include not only the conduct complaints cases that you're referring to, that 700, but also the background checks, which are another about 1,400 per year. So if you think about it, there's a whole world of investigations that are then broken down into background investigations, complaint investigations, and other types of investigations.
Who was doing the background investigations before you?
All of the investigators were, and they still do, but it's focused so that every third one, so a third of the work is going to just one particular individual who is not the healthcare advisor investigator level, but is at an investigator two level, which is a lower cost position.
Mr. Chair? Spend the debate.
I'm going to tell you right from the beginning that I share your concerns about the increase in FTE for this board. And I was looking at it, this is three nights ago, knowing we were going to have this discussion somewhere along the line. I also tried to look at trying to get a better handle on what their workload really was, and frankly, performance measures didn't help me as much as I liked. I sat down and tried to crunch some numbers, and I looked at the number of, if I was reading the numbers right, the number of graduates coming out of our schools and state are stagnant around a 700 figure, up or down a little bit for the last 5 years. The need for nurses is increasing. Your population serving is up maybe 5 or 10,000 licensees. I assume that with an aging population of the nurse force that that probably 5% of the nurses are being lost every year out of the workforce. That's 2,000. The gap there is 12 to 1,300 nurses a year in the state, if I'm reading the numbers correctly. And this is just my own math, so I may be wrong about this. And then I tried to think about what it was like for me 7 or 8 or 9 years ago with a very stable workforce, nurses in the hospital. I knew them all. They knew me. We'd occasionally have a new nurse on the floor. Things didn't change too much. And I thought about what it's like now. I go on the floors of my hospitals, and nurses are coming in and out from other states because they're coming in on temporary basis for 30 or 60 days. I have foreign-trained nurses who are trying to learn the English language and whose skills are not those of the ones coming out of my local programs. I have more difficult time interfacing with those nurses. And it makes me think that your workload is not just changed from the point of view of the number of nurses you're dealing with. It is dramatically changed by the type of nursing situation we're dealing with people coming in and out of the state, coming in on a temporary basis for 5 or 6 months to fill a need at a hospital suddenly and quickly, and then moving back out. We were on a diversion at one point from Roseburg Hospital on ICU cases, people on respirators, because they didn't have enough nurses in their ICU. They had the beds, but not the nurses. And I remember a night when we were transferring a patient from the middle of the night in the wintertime from Roseburg to Bedford on a respirator in an ambulance with a nurse on board. That's something that never happened before. So, Mr. Chair, I think all things considered from what I just said, that their increase in staff is probably justified because of the things that have changed in nursing are so dramatic that I had to actually sit down and think about it for 3 or 4 days, that what's going on in my life as a doctor in dealing with a different kind of nursing population and what's happening with this board is trying to deal with. I think you're not seeing the forest because you're in the trees. All you see is more complaints. All you see is more work to be done to get people licensed quickly and faster. You're worried about the quality of those nurses coming in, and I don't think you're seeing what's happening to the nursing as a result of the nursing shortage in the state and the aging of the nursing population. And that's probably the point you're having a hard time making here, because when you're in the cloud of war, you don't remember why you got into that war and what happened. So from that point of view, I think I would vote for this increase. But I would share the chair's position that there is a need for you to be as efficient as possible in doing this and not just throw more people at it. You know, this, we don't want World War I where you just kept throwing more bodies at the thing to achieve the objective. You've got to have some efficiency here, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my cautionary note, and I hope I haven't gone on too long, Mr. Chair.
Well, committee members, here's the consideration I'm giving. This is a graph that they provided us showing how the number of new licensing applications are coming in. The high point was 2002, and so we had the 2003, we had a session 2003, and they requested an additional investigator, and they were able to handle 2002, but it was so many. And so now you have the number in 2003, it came down in 2004, and it's even less. It's coming down this way instead of going up, and they're here asking for two additional investigators, and yet they're able to handle investigation in 2002 with what they had, and now they've got less coming in and one more investigator than they had in the past, and they're coming to this committee asking for two additional ones. And so that's the confusion. I mean, if it was my business, if each of us, if it was our business, and our operations manager's coming in saying, I need two more employees and the cost is going to come out of our bottom line, we'd be saying, what's the justification? Say, well, the applications are going down, but we'd like to do a better job. And so I'm just saying that, you know, we have to look at it.
Chair, I think Pat wants to say something about the graph. I may have handed you a bad graph.
Mr. Chair, I simply wanted to tell you that in fiscal year 2002, we saw quite an increase due to the OHSU strike. There were approximately 700 nurses who applied in about a four-month period. And by the downside of that operation, we were, again, handling applications. And actually, that was handled better because we did have a call center.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a good point about new applications. I think also in that same section we have a couple graphs about how long people have been licensed, and certainly the most mature licensees, if you will, cause the fewest problems or have the fewest complaints or cause the fewest background checks, et cetera. And fully one-third of the CNA population, even though it has grown in the last 2 years by 2,000, from 16 to over 18,000, only one-third, or I should say, not only, a full one-third of those people have only been licensed for 2 years or less, and another 26% have only been licensed for 2 and 5 years. So it's one of those where the numbers don't tell the whole story, because it's every time you have to process a person, it increases. I believe the RN population that's under 2 years is only about 12%. Mm-hmm. And as Senator Bates pointed out, that we only have about 700 to 800 people we gain through the examination process every year, but we have probably about 1,200 to 1,400 additional new nurses to Oregon who come in through the endorsement process. And that's a significant screening issue. But that does kind of bring up our total added nurses each year to about 3,000.
Well, thank you for that clarification. Am I correct, though, that I understand that the bubble in 2002, but for 2004 there were less than 2001, according to the information here?
New applications, sir, yes.
Okay. All right, and I'm just trying to flesh it out.
No.
Senator West,
I share it.
Fair question.
Pat, have any of your requirements, either through federal, state, or internal board policies, changed that would put an additional onus on you as a board when you're vetting, background checking or licensing an individual applicant? Do you do more for the same amount of applicants? Or has your workload increased based on
Richardson and Senator Weston? I can give you two examples. We have, and I think that graph shows that we have a lot more foreign nurses applying to the Board of Nursing, and they take an incredibly longer period of time to evaluate the credentials and to make sure that they have English proficiency before we license them. So we're seeing an increase in that. And then we have had a lot more advanced practice issues in nurses applying, and they also, in evaluating their credentials, take a lot more time. And we are also going to be implementing the pain management continuing education requirements for all nurses starting in 2006. So that's going to take us more time as well. In terms of the complexity of cases, Kim, I'll let you answer that.
Yes, Chair Richardson, Senator Westland, what we are seeing is a product of the nursing shortage and who is going into nursing now. You might say to go into nursing is best if one has a calling because of the type of work that it is. In periods of shortage, people will go because there are jobs. There's the possibility for employment, so it will pull people into the profession or pull people back into the profession. So we're seeing more competency issues. We're seeing more criminal activity. We're seeing more incidents of identity theft.
of persons who are impersonating nurses. These are more complicated cases, and they take more time to figure out. So, yes, there are some environmental factors that I think are putting more pressures on our workload than just the sheer numbers.
Yeah. One final question myself, and it deals with fingerprinting. It's package 105 2 years ago, and the board declined to pursue fingerprinting authority and associated expenditures. Am I correct that it was fingerprinting was requested 2 years ago, but it was either withdrawn or turned down, and we're looking at $588,000 increase expenditure for fingerprinting and nationwide background checks? What is the justification for doing that now that didn't exist 2 years ago?
Senator, excuse me, Chair Richards, all these promotions or demotions.
Not a promotion necessarily.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's not a promotion.
It's double the work.
The, ever since the 1997 legislative session, the board has considered the issue of fingerprinting. We started doing LEDs in 1995, as you know, and LEDs is only for Oregon criminal backgrounds, arrests or convictions. The problem is that so many people come into Oregon from other states, whether they were licensed in another state or whatever. The struggle we've always had is the one we mentioned yesterday, the ACLU, civil liberties. It is very difficult to define who you're going to fingerprint and the circumstances.
Yes, before we go into that, my question is, what has changed in 2 years? Not the justification for it now, that you know, if it wasn't approved 2 years ago, and it was, and part of this wasn't even requested 2 years ago, what's different now?
Chair Richardson, we withdrew it 2 years ago, and I think one of the things that has changed is because we hadn't had the conversation with nurses out there, number one, how did they feel about it, and we did have that conversation with the nurses this summer and found out that they weren't opposed to it. And I think just the kinds of complaints that we have been seeing in our board office has made us realize that if we're really here to protect the public, that this is something that we need to do.
Okay. Any questions on it? Senator Wesley.
Well, just a comment and talk about what's changed. That this is from personal experience, and I'm in St. Charles Hospital, and one of the nurses is coming in with my little cup of pain pills, and trust me, I'm very anxious to see her. You know, she comes and starts to hand it to me and go, wait a minute, I'll be right back. So she leaves with a little cup and hey, come back here. She was only gone a couple of seconds, but she had to go check a new federal pain management condition. I mean, is this making any sense? You guys have a new federal pain management requirement or procedure you have to go through?
Senator Wesley, I'm not familiar with that. I'm sorry.
Well, all I know is that she was there, had to go do something to check with a federal pain management requirement edict or administrative rule that had just been issued. And then, I mean, 3 minutes later, she was back in. But so I know.
Sometimes they just say that to kind of unruly patients.
Yeah. It's not pain management. It's patient management. Yeah, that's what it must be.
The point we're following here is exactly what he's talking about. JCOH has made that one of the markers. You have to watch at a hospital, report on in each patient what the pain, and we've made pain one of the markers. And it came out of federal legislation. And that's one more. It's just one more thing the nurse has to do. Is it improve patient care? Yes, it does. We were not taking care of patients well enough as far as pain control is concerned. But the nurse has to make a mark on that chart that she evaluated the patient as far as pain level was concerned, pain that the patient was experiencing, not the pain the patient was causing the nurse, which was the
okay,
key care.
I'm waiting for the tie-in to criminal background checks on nationwide and fingerprinting.
She had to go give her fingerprints before she could give me the cup of tea.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have been somewhat ambivalent on this in terms of the incredible cost involved in fingerprinting. And so I was kind of holding my final judgment would be on the two House bills as they come forward in terms of if those pass, authorizing you to spend the money to implement it, it seems to me just a technical thing that we'd be doing at this point. Also, I think Representative Hanna and I want to seriously look at the state police costs in terms of the cost of implementing the fingerprinting. But while you're here, though, and this will relate to how I'll be voting on 2102 or 2157, you mentioned a few minutes back that there have been cases of identity theft.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of my first guess is we've got only a little over 1% of people that are turned down based on their criminal background checks. So it seems to me that would be a relatively adequate way to screen out people that we don't want in the profession. But has there been instances, and how common is that, of somebody actually saying they're not who they are? And the second part of that is, do you need the fingerprint in order to be sure that you're running the proper national records criminal history check?
Chair Richardson, Representative Hansen, the LEDS check that we do now is not based on fingerprints. It's based on their name, the representation of their name. And a lot of impostering that we get is based on someone who says they are who they are, but they just claim a credential and a license they don't have. We have had instances where it has been identity theft, where someone has gone through and gotten someone else's name off a diploma, off a certification of graduation, and become that person. Probably the most high-profile recent case that we had was in the Bend area just this last fall, where an individual had created, through the use of home technologies that are available through scanning, and it's amazing what you can do with a home publisher, had created entire transcripts of someone else, and actually faked their way into Texas, got a license from Texas, endorsed here into Oregon, got an Oregon license, practiced for a number of years, and it wasn't until actually this individual was trying to endorse into Canada that they again forged more documents, and we were able to look at that and say, gee, those aren't our documents. And it started this whole ball tumbling. Arguably, this individual was able to do that because there was no check as to who she was. She had been engaged in criminal activity in other areas. So, but realistically, that is not the main reason for requesting fingerprints. It's not to catch identity theft. The main reason is to be able to ensure that all of these people coming in from other states who aren't going to show up as a positive LEDS in Oregon, because that only goes to activities that occurred in Oregon, that we find out about them. That's really the main impetus behind the fingerprinting bills. I hope I answered both your questions. But
well, follow up. So the real important thing is do we need the fingerprinting in order to access the criminal history outside the state of Oregon?
Chair Richardson, Representative Hansen, yes, we do.
Okay.
As we keep saying to folks, the board is not interested in someone's fingerprints. What we're interested in is the nationwide criminal background check, and the only way to access that is through someone's fingerprints.
Okay.
Because they won't do it on a name search. They will only do it on a fingerprint check. So that's why we go there.
From my point of view, the debate here is not whether they should be doing this. It's really the debate of why you didn't do it 2 years ago. Nothing personal, okay?
Because it's $600,000.
Yeah, but the next point of the debate is an issue which I think you have raised, and that is there a more effective way of doing this? Because agency after agency is realizing they have to do this, whether it's mm-hmm. physicians or nurses or teachers or public health mm-hmm. officials or police officers. We need to be able to do this in an efficient manner. And I'm not sure the way we're doing it is the best way. We may have to have one agency doing this at a more efficient manner at a lower cost. And that's a different issue, but one that's pertinent to this discussion.
Yes.
My feeling is, frankly, it should have been done before. I'm glad you're doing it now. is there a better way to do it financially? I haven't got the answer to the last part of the question.
All right. Are there further questions for the nursing board today? You've answered our questions. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to point out that I'm glad my numbers were correct. I crunched those myself at home.
Very well.
Yeah.
If
really
you don't make as a doctor, accountancy.
I'm bad enough as a doctor. We're not going to make that one. The place will go bankrupt. What I would like to point out, though, in doing that is that those numbers weren't readily available in their performance outcomes that I could grab and read. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, was the most pertinent numbers I got out of this. We're graduating this many, our need is this many. Why weren't you screaming that at us? You know, we're 1,500 short.
By the way, it does. They had a recommendation in 2003 that you have 800 by 2005. Is that correct? Remember that? Let me go back and see. Anyway, that was one of the recommendations that were made. Is that they needed that there needs to be a focus on increasing the number of nurses. And okay, here it is. Here's the summary of performance measure action. Number of basic RN students graduated from Oregon nursing education programs and practicing in Oregon. In 1998, there were 629, and in 2002, the number had risen to 700, with a goal of 900 by 2005.
And what are we graduating this year? I think it's actually dropped down a little bit.
We have not met that performance measure.
And it really isn't the purview of this board. I mean, that's education. It's a different committee. I understand that. But
I think OH, SU, Oregon Health Science University, yes, ought to come forward and explain what they're doing to make this happen.
And community
because
colleges.
It's such a huge thing. Well, and I think the community colleges are working on it. I know OIT and SOU are, but they're saying that they have to coordinate it with OHSU because they're the ones that are kind of taking the lead on the nursing program. And I don't know if that's TURF or if that's necessary because I don't know the background on that. Anyway, committee, we have reviewed and had answers to the questions. I think that we are, for a couple of reasons, we'll be voting on the holding work session again and actually voting on these bills at a future time. There's no real pressing need that this take place today, and I would pose that without further questions that we'll adjourn for today.
Okay.
Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.